You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jumma Mubarak.
And I don't know how to say it in Buddhist and Hindu, but that's three of the world's great religions. Happy Friday, or maybe one of the secular ones. It's Friday on the Tom Hartman Program. It's Brunch with Bernie, our first hour, our national town hall meeting with a man I think of as America's senator, Senator Bernie Sanders. Although he ably represents the state of Vermont, his website, sanders.senate.gov, which is actually one of the news sites that I regularly check and I recommend to you. Bernie, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. I understand you've been traveling around the state of Vermont the last couple of days, and I'm curious, you know, where you are and what you're hearing and what you're seeing in that state that might be not just representative of Vermont, but also the nation as a whole.
Well, the Senate is off this week from work in Washington, so we're back home getting around the state. And what I've been focusing on this week is meeting with young people and doing town meetings on college campuses. We did one up in Johnson State the other day, and we were at the University of Vermont last night. And they were great meetings, Tom. There's a lot of energy among the young people. Questions were great. A lot of attentiveness, and these kids are concerned about the future of this country. But what one picks up right away is a lot of anxiety about what happens to their lives. Many of these young people, it was a young woman in Johnson State who got up there, and she's struggling first in her family to go to college, worried about what kind of job she's going to have, and struggling with a huge student loan out there, doesn't know how she's going to pay it, and whether she's going to have the income and the job to pay it. And there's also, interestingly enough, a lot of interest on the Occupying Wall Street movement, a lot of sympathy to that movement. And I think that movement is striking a chord all across the country and certainly on college campuses. Earlier this morning, I'm in Rutland, Vermont right now. Early in this morning, I was in Middlebury, Vermont. Visiting one of the great institutions down there. It's a parent-child center. It's a wonderful place where low-income people get the child care for their kids. They get mentoring. They get GED efforts. They get a bunch of services, wraparound services, in a very non-bureaucratic way. But what you hear there are people who are able to get jobs, are getting jobs that pay $10, $11 an hour, and when you get the job, you lose your state help and federal help for child care, for food stamps. So people are caught in a quandary that if you go forward and you gain independence, you lose the support system for your kids and your family.
So now, isn't this in part a consequence of the Ending Welfare as We Know It program of the 90s?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so here you have somebody right now. Child care is very expensive. So somebody manages to get a job. They're getting paid $10 an hour. In most cases, no benefits. But if you're making $10 an hour, it's $400 a week, and child care costs $150. And if you lose your housing benefits, and maybe you lose your food stamps, you're worse off than you were before you got the job.
Right. Well, you know, the minimum wage right now, if we were to take the 1965 minimum wage and simply adjust it for inflation, would be, depending on which inflation adjuster you use, would be somewhere between $14 and $17.
There you go.
So, you know, it's like people just can't live on the minimum wage.
Right. And I think one of the points nationally that we have not focused on is obviously many of us are concentrating on the horrendous unemployment situation, which is really 16%. If you include those people who have given up looking for work and those people who are working part-time. But on top of all of that, we have to look at the wage situation. And that is that median family income now is close to $4,000 less than it was in 1999. You've got millions and millions and millions of people who are working at lower wages than they used to. When people lose their jobs now, say if you lose your job in manufacturing and you get a new job, the very strong likelihood is that that job is going to pay you lower wages than the job you previously had. And, you know, that is just not only a blow to people economically, it's a blow to people psychologically in terms of, you know, after working your whole life, you're making 25% less than you used to. And we've also been hearing some testimony and some looking at some studies that for old workers, you know, if you're 55 now and you lose your job, unless we turn this economy around, many of those 55-year-old workers are just not going to find work.
Right. Which means that they're going to end up homeless.
Well, depending on their condition. But just think about it. If you had planned your whole life to work to 65, to put a few bucks in the bank for retirement, suddenly now economically you're not having income coming in for 10 years. And psychologically, what does it mean to you? What does it do to your self-worth?
Yeah. I had a guy call this program yesterday who was in his 50s and said he said, tomorrow morning I'm moving into my car because the sheriff is coming to evict me. He said, I've been out of work for a year and a half. I've burned through all my savings. All my credit cards are maxed out. I have nothing left, no, you know, period. I'm literally going to be living in my car. And I just, you know, I don't know what to say to that.
I mean, and you're right. It
shouldn't happen in America.
That's right. It's happening in America. And you look at the young kids, the college students, the high school students, they're wondering, just think about, you know, starting off your life. You go to school. In many cases, first-generation college students, people save up, they borrow money, and then they're going out there and they can't find a job. What a way to begin your career, you can't find a job.
Yeah.
All of which takes us, you know, to the understanding that the current economic situation is a disaster, and that we need a sense of urgency in Washington, and we have got to continue to put the Republicans on the defensive if they refuse, as they apparently are, to support any serious jobs program. Now, we've come back for the last couple of weeks with jobs programs, which don't go, frankly, as far as they should. But we cannot get any Republican support for them. We're trying to protect the hundreds of thousands of teachers, police officers, firefighters who are losing their jobs. Can't get any Republican support for that. I believe next week, we'll be having a proposal up to start putting money into our infrastructure, rebuilding our roads, bridges, schools, rail systems, water systems, and putting people to work, making our nation more productive. It's not quite clear that we're going to get any Republican support for that, but this is what I do think, Tom. I think you've got to keep bringing those issues back and back and back so that every American eventually sees the bankruptcy of this right-wing ideology. All that the Republicans can talk about, and poll after poll shows that nobody believes this anymore. They say that the best way to create jobs is to give more tax breaks to millionaires and large corporations, trickle-down economics. Nobody believes that anymore because people know we saw that movie before. That's what George Bush's administration was about. And what happened in that administration is we lost 500,000 private sector jobs. And with all of the huge tax breaks we've given to large corporations, they've laid off 1.8 million American workers in the last 10 years because they're busy moving to China and Vietnam or wherever they're going to get cheap labor. So nobody believes that anymore.
Yeah. On top of that, if I may, the Center for American Progress ran the numbers yesterday on the budget cuts that the Republicans had passed. The only things that they've agreed to since they took control of the House are budget cuts, and there was that big compromise that Obama did.
Right.
It has cost us 370,000 jobs in America.
True.
And that's at the federal level. You add to that 500,000 jobs that have been cut in almost all of them, Republican states by Republican governors. If these government jobs had not been cut, our unemployment rate would be, you know, in the neighborhood of 8%. It would be a full point below where it is right now.
Yep.
It's just incredible. Anyhow, it's our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. I'm going to get out of the way here and let you call in 866-987-THOM for Senator Sanders. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Bernie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. There's a link to his Facebook page and all kinds of other sites. And they get a great newsletter. You can subscribe to your email newsletter there, too.
If you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, for the devil even knows you're there.
Welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders taking your questions. Greg, in Hot Springs, Arkansas, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Senator Sanders. It's very nice to talk to you. Thank you for doing what you do. I know it's kind of a little bitty thing, but now there's a company up in northern Arkansas that makes refrigerators and washing machines and stuff like that. And now they're outsourcing that to Poland, too, at this time. I'm so confused of what our country's doing. Glass-Steagall needs to go back to Glass-Steagall. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Greg, Tom and I have talked about this issue a whole lot. In the media, it doesn't get a whole lot of resonance, the issue of trade. And that is because all of the corporate world, virtually all of the media, has decided, despite the overwhelming evidence, they believe that our current trade policy works. And the evidence is it doesn't work. The evidence is that the free trade agreement with China has cost us millions of good-paying jobs. NAFTA has cost us hundreds of thousands of good-paying jobs. The function of these trade agreements, NAFTA, CAFTA, Permanent Normal Trade Relations with China, and others, is to make it easier for companies to shut down in America and move abroad, hire people at very low wages abroad, and bring their products back into America. And that is precisely what has happened. In the last 10 years, we have lost 50,000 factories in America. My state of Vermont is never a very big manufacturing state. But even in Vermont, in the last 10 years or so, we've lost approximately one-third of our manufacturing jobs. And by and large, those were good jobs. So when you lose manufacturing jobs that pay people a living wage, provide decent benefits, and you replace them with McDonald's jobs or Walmart jobs, this is a race to the bottom. I happen to believe, A, our trade policies are a disaster. B, the demand has got to be made that corporate America start reinvesting in this country, not in China, that we have got to start building the products that our people consume and not continuing to allow these companies to outsource. So that is a huge issue, Greg, and it's one that we have to continue to focus on.
Max in Ocean Shore, Washington. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. It's an honor to speak to you. I have a question. Why couldn't the president or yourself introduce a bill that would say to effectively eliminate paid advertising on television? Since we own the airwaves anyway, why couldn't we just make those have to be public service announcements? This would eliminate, of course, all the problems of graft and corruption in Washington. The only people it would impact basically would be the owners of the television channels and the lobbyists. Thank you.
Well, Max, that's a very good idea, and you're touching on a very important issue. What I could tell you right off the bat is that proposal would probably get three votes. I mean, it wouldn't get a whole lot of votes precisely because the Broadcasting Association is so powerful. And as you indicate, it would mean a huge loss of revenue for them. But I think what Max is talking about is a goal that we want to, in the future, try to move toward. And that is, instead of seeing our airwaves being bombarded with very expensive 30-second ads, most of them attacking everybody else, wouldn't it be nice if there were television time available to all of the candidates where they could seriously discuss their points of view on the major issues facing our country? I think that would significantly raise the level of debate in this country rather than continuing to be dependent on 30-second ads. So it is an issue that we have looked at, Max, and we'll, I don't know exactly how we proceed on that. But your point is well taken.
Yeah. And I think you'll have a problem with the Supreme Court on that, too, another issue.
Right. Then you're into Citizens United and the right.
Yeah.
But there are different ways. Should candidates be able to get free time on television in order to express their point of view.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You're right. That is a different issue. Joel in Mesa, Michigan. Joel, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Mr. Sanders. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Joel.
My question is, Tom Hartman on his TV show the other day spoke about supply-side economics. My question is, how do we get out of the cycle of supply-side economics with what Reagan started? Thank you.
Well, Joel, that is, I mean, that's in many ways the $64 question. And I think the answer is simply a political answer. What we have got to do is make sure that every American, every working person, understands that tax breaks for the wealthy and large corporations do not trickle down, do not create wealth for everybody, but in fact serve the purpose of making the wealthiest people in this country and the largest corporations in this country even wealthier. That's what their purpose is, and that's what they have accomplished. So we're in a position now where, as a result of trickle-down economics and huge tax breaks for those people who don't need it, where the top 1% earn more income than the bottom 50%, the top 400 wealthiest Americans have more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans, where you have corporations making billions of profits and in some cases pay nothing in federal income tax. That's the result of trickle-down economic theory. And in my view, what we've got to do is start investing in America, in our infrastructure, in energy, in education. That's the way to create jobs and improve life for the middle class.
Amen. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It is Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program. Your calls for Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov.
If you got a problem, don't care what it is. You need a hand, I can assure you this. I can help. I got two strong arms, I can help. It would sure do me good to do you good. Let me help.
It's the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, and our national town hall meeting. And Bernie, you're still here? All set
to go?
Okay, Tim in Sioux City, Iowa. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Say, I have a question here. I'm a 32-year firefighter. Been working a deferred comp program for the last 25 years. And the way that I see is that if I had an opportunity to invest that money right now in real estate, such as get out of Sioux City and move to Vegas where I could get a pretty good house, but the way it is, sits right now is that I'm going to be spending about 30% of that. I was wondering if there's any type that we can get the same breaks that they do as to where we get that out and invest in real estate, because there's tens of thousands of people just like me across this country that could make a difference.
You're talking about middle-class tax breaks?
Yes.
Okay.
And specifically the deferred comp, that we could get some type of break on that.
Tom, why don't you jump in on that one?
Well, I don't know what the deferred comp is. What is that, Tim?
Basically, what it is that you have a program as to where you put it in, that's tax-free dollars ahead of time. You pay them when you retire. When you start pulling it back out, it's a retirement program.
Oh, I see. And it's locked up in a way that you can't use it to buy real estate, for example?
I can, but when I pulled it out, I would be paying approximately 26 to 30%.
So that's not an investment that qualifies under the program. I don't know much about it beyond that.
I'm sorry. I just don't know that much about it either.
Yeah. You know, the idea of a middle class tax cut in general, you know, is probably not unreasonable. But John in Reno, Nevada, you are on the air with Senator Sanders. Speaking of Nevada.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, Senator Sanders. Yeah. You know, this isn't my question, but I think that your filibuster was historic, and I was kind of disappointed it wasn't edited into maybe an hour or two or something like that.
It's been turned into a book, John. You can buy it in the bookstores.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great, because it was really fantastic and very educational, and that's what we need, because obviously the Democrats aren't going to step up and give this kind of information. Now, Senator Sanders pointed out this economic statistic that I was going to give as an example of 400 equaling 150 million other Americans. But the things that the Republicans actually run on and get a lot of traction on, you can refute in about 10 seconds. For example, why not go into the red states themselves? And instead of calling them the base, like they can't be turned around, let them know that if you want to get socialism, American socialism, and if you want to get big government out of your life, just understand that you're going to be getting public schools out of your life, minimum wage, time and a half for overtime, Social Security, the list goes on.
Right.
And if these people were actually knew what they were in for,
right,
then let them make that decision.
Right. Now, John, you make a very good point. And there was a poll that was done, I believe, by McClatchy Newspapers a number of months ago, just on John's point. And they asked people who were sympathetic to the Tea Party, what they thought about cuts in Social Security and Medicare. And there was very, very strong opposition. I think John's point is exactly right. What the Democrats have got to do is be a lot more aggressive and go into these red states, because I think working people in many of these states are hurting badly, and I think when they understand that a lot of the money coming into the Tea Party is coming from large corporate interests and very, very wealthy people, and I think if we can educate and organize working class people to say, no, we don't think it's a good idea that we destroy Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Pell Grants. No, we don't think that that's a good idea, while at the same time we give tax breaks to the very rich. So I think there needs to be strong grassroots organizing among working class people in these red states. And I agree with John. I think when you get the facts out to people, that after demonizing the federal government, do they understand what they're talking about? It gets back to that issue, which I personally have heard. People say, get the government off of my Medicare, out of my Medicare, without understanding that Medicare is a government program. So we have to educate people about what government does, what it does well, what it doesn't do well, but not let our right-wing Republicans, friends, just confuse people so that they end up voting against their own best interests.
Grant in Baltimore, Maryland. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, this is Fran.
Oh,
I'm trying to see if the Occupy Wall people will challenge everybody in Congress when it comes to elections, that they put up somebody to primary everybody to get the money out and have them sign a petition that if you do not take money, if you take money from Wall Street or lobbyists or these super PACs, we will not vote for you. And the people that occupy Wall Street should get maybe just money from us. Then no more than $100 donation from anyone.
Well, Grant, I agree with the thrust of your comments. What you are saying is that, as I hear you, is that the essential problem in Washington now is most of the elected officials there are dependent upon big money, end up doing the bidding of big money, and ignore the needs of working families. And I think that the Occupy Wall Street movement can learn a lot from the Tea Party, and that it should be moving into political activity and fighting for the most progressive candidates that they can find, and after electing them, holding them accountable.
Tara in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Tara, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for being a voice of sanity in a world of corporate shills. It's great that you exist, and I love that.
Thank you very much.
My question is about the legality of the cop raids on the Occupy Wall Street movement. I just heard about the 10th Amendment regarding the California thing, so now I'm confused. But I thought that federal law trumps state or local laws, and therefore the constitutional right of freedom of assembly would trump any, you know, there's no mention in the Constitution of curfews or camping or cleanliness. So doesn't the federal law trump the state law, making what the cops are doing illegal.
I think it depends on the circumstance, but it goes without saying that the right to assemble, freedom of speech, the right to voice your opinion, is a very, very profound American right. And I would hope very much that municipalities all over the country respect that right. People break the law and so forth, that's another issue. But the right to protest and to express your point of view is what America is about.
Mike, I see a city for you. I see 616 area code. Is that Grand Rapids?
Burlington, Vermont.
Oh, Burlington, Vermont. Okay, I must be reading it wrong. Anyhow, Mike, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator Sanders. I'm part of my local Occupy Wall Street movement here. And it seems to us that you and the Democrats are trying to co-opt this movement, claiming that we have a common priority. But there's something that you and the Democrats whom you caucus with never talk about, and that's the fact that in 2009, you guys showed the American people what your number one priority was. And it wasn't jobs or climate change or even properly regulating Wall Street. Your guys' number one priority is protecting the filibuster. You seem to care more about your future power in the minority than helping everyday hurting people. So my question for you is this. Why should this Occupy movement get behind any progressive or Democrat currently in power? Because it seems to us that all you're going to say when you get reelected is, well, we'd really like to pass this bill, but we don't have 60 votes. Those darn Republicans did it again. Maybe next election cycle in 2 years, 90 Democrats will get elected and something will get done. But until then, even though people are unemployed and we're reaching some real tipping points with climate change, we got to protect the filibuster.
Got to protect the filibuster. Well, Mike, you know, you and anybody else has the right to express your point of view and come to your conclusion. And if you choose not to support progressive candidates or not to be involved in the political process, that is certainly your right. But then you're going to have to answer the question of what are you going to do about creating jobs or dealing with climate change or dealing with a growing income and wealth inequality in the United States of America. In terms of the filibuster, actually, what is going on in Washington right now, as I hope you know, is that we have seen Republicans use obstructionism in an unprecedented way. It is, to my view, clear that we have to do everything that we can to stop that type of obstructionism. But the minority does have certain rights. If you're asking me, have the Democrats been as aggressive as they should in saying to the Republicans that if they want the filibuster, they're going to have to spend a few weeks down there on the floor explaining to the American people why they're obstructing this or that piece of legislation, I would agree with you. So that's my view.
So in the 30 seconds we have left, you're saying if there's going to be a filibuster, let's make it a real filibuster.
Right. I think the Democrats have by and large been weak in that respect. The Republicans have gotten away with a lot of obstructionism, and they have not been asked to pay the price. They haven't been exposed effectively for the American people to understand the legislation that they have been obstructing.
Yeah, well said. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, taking your calls here. It's 45 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman program. Check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov, for more information. It's a great news site, as well as a great link to his newsletter. We'll be right back with more of your calls for the Senator.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And back in just a moment with your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders is our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Sanders.Senate.gov.
Every second counts on the clock that's ticking. Gotta leave.
It's your media support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman Program. Brunch with Bernie, our special first hour Friday national town hall meeting. Bernie taking your calls and questions. Craig in Seattle, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys living?
Good.
Good. So I have a question in regards to, Citizens United?
Yep.
So my understanding is that corporations, as ruled by the Supreme Court, are humans. If that's the case, aren't there several or many of these companies that do, in fact, have felonies? And if so, why are they allowed to continue in the political process?
Well, Tom, you wrote a book on this. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, of the Fortune 500 companies, I think there's only about a dozen of them that haven't been convicted of federal felonies. And it's astounding. In most states, if you've been convicted of a felony as a person, you can't even vote. And these companies are still allowed to do it. So I'm with him.
Craig makes an interesting point. If they are people, why don't you treat them like people?
Yeah.
We just did a study, had the Department of Defense take a look at the defense contractors who were defrauding the Department of Defense and the American taxpayers. And the numbers are quite astronomical. As you've just indicated, over a period of years, virtually every major defense contractor has been involved in one type of fraud or another. Are ripping off the taxpayers of this country.
Right, which is a felony, which if they were an individual living in Florida would mean that they could never again vote, which is just incredible. Tim in Chevy Chase, Maryland, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, this is Tim. To continue with the issue of Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission ruling, my understanding is that the president is drafting an order requiring corporations that do business with the federal government to disclose their contributions, and I wanted to hear Mr. Sanders' response to what he feels is going to be the outcome or the impact of that executive order. Commenting on it.
Well, Tim, I think disclosure is always a good thing. I think it goes without saying that people who do business with the federal government, have a huge number of lobbyists in Washington, and B, these guys know the science of campaign contributions. They know how to do it and how much to make, and they are playing a very powerful role. So to the degree that we can learn about their campaign contributions and those are made public, I think that's a very positive step forward.
Ken in Great Falls, Montana, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity. In 1990, I left the Exxon Corporation as an engineer, and I've been working in renewable energy ever since. I've been very saddened recently is that we've pretty much stopped all work towards climate change mitigation. And I got one idea I'd like you to hear. The simple idea, go back to the Great Depression. We did what was called the REA, where we electrified every farm in the country through co-ops and loans and a great system. Why couldn't we revise that system as a green co-ops and to electrify with solar panels and windmills the houses in this country?
Right.
You could sell bonds, like we sold war bonds for World War II, we could sell green bonds. And then the electricity from the solar panels would pay for them. It's insane that we think that Solyndra is this great crisis. The $500 million we put in that company could be paid for in 10 years by taking out $500 million worth of solar panels out of that country and putting them on the 90,000 buildings that the United States government owns.
Well, Ken,
I think it would pay for itself.
Let me respond in a couple of ways. Number one, I think the gist of what you're saying is absolutely right. I think even before the Republicans took over the House, we were not moving as aggressively as we should. Although, in fairness to Obama, he has put more money into energy efficiency and sustainable energy than we have ever seen before, but nowhere near enough. And I agree with Ken. I mean, I introduced a legislation called 10 million solar rooftops. And that means we will help homeowners and businesses all over this country get solar rooftops on their buildings. And when we do that, we are going to go a long way to cut greenhouse gas emissions and become energy independent and, by the way, create jobs. The other point that Ken is making, which is a very important point, is when we lower somebody's electric bill by putting up solar panels, you're saving that consumer a substantial sum of money, which can be used to repay the investment for the solar in the first place. That's called on-bill financing. And one of the things that I believe very much is that we can pay for a whole lot of solar, and that's what
Ken is talking about, through getting utility or whoever to make the investment, help people with the solar, and you repay that by lower electric bills. If your electric bill goes down, the differential goes to pay off the initial investment. Third point is that we are right. We can do it. I mean, one of the things that we have got to do is transform our energy system away from fossil fuel and foreign oil. Solar, both photovoltaics and solar thermal, are ready to go. We're beginning to move, but nowhere near fast enough. We also have geothermal. You got wind. You got biomass. We have got to launch a massive effort to transform our energy system. And I think the ideas that Ken advocated make a lot of sense to me.
Okay, we have just 1 minute left. Bruce in Saline, Ohio. Real quick question for Bernie.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on, Tom. And thanks a lot, Mr. Sanders, Senator Sanders, for listening to me. And I have a question on Social Security. Like Social Security is supposed to be like you put money into a banking account and you have it there for...
Bruce, I'm sorry I to cut you off. I shouldn't have taken a question with just a minute ago, Bernie. I should have just tossed it to you for a wrap-up. Quick thought on Social Security, and then we're out.
We are working very hard right now, A, to prevent any cuts to Social Security. Social Security has a $2.5 trillion surplus. We want to extend Social Security for 75 years. We can do that by lifting the cap on income above $250,000.
Thank you, Bernie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday, although there is a lot in the news. Millionaires get whatever they want in America. Well, 68% of them say they want their taxes raised. Yes, seriously. New survey by the Spectrum Group. They actually surveyed millionaires, people who earn more than $1 million a year. And 68% of them said, yes, please raise my taxes. Get the country out of this mess. Put people back to work. You know, it's like the German businessman who said to the incredulous American reporter, I do not want to be a rich man in a poor country. 68% American millionaires apparently agree with that. Good on them. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. Mark, you have been keeping us up to date on what's going on in Occupy Seattle. Give us the latest.
Wow, there's a lot going on here in Seattle. The good news is we have two occupation sites now, a night camp with tents at City Hall and a 24-hour occupation at Westlake Park, which we've been holding for a month. And on Wednesday, we had a full-on dance party with at least 100 people in the park. And last night, I was invited to speak at City Hall for a panel discussion about Occupy Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But we still choose. I sent a request actually today to the ACLU, requesting an injunction against the city and the police department and park rangers for violating people's constitutional rights in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And also asking that they file a lawsuit against the city, because of the civil rights violations. So we're still having issues with, just people being harassed by police basically for being in the park. So one of the responses to that is on Saturday, everyone is voted to march to a local college where the students have actually invited us to come and set up a camp. So yesterday there was a meeting with the president of the college. It's the Seattle Central Community College. And basically we're in negotiations with the president about setting up camp there and what we're going to do from here. But it's a crucial moment because the wet, cold weather is really taking its toll on people. And another item, too, is that there was a letter that went to the mayor today just asking him basically to go the way of Portland, Los Angeles, and Eugene, Oregon, where occupation protesters are allowed to camp overnight in the public parks and pitch tents.
Right.
In Eugene, the city council, at the request of the chief of police, actually, passed an exemption from park rules for the occupation protesters. And also in California, there's a DA there that's refusing to prosecute the protesters that were arrested at the Occupy Sacramento protest. So, I think after Oakland, some cities and police departments are starting to back off a little bit and rethink their approach to the protesters.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign. But I'm just worried that, you know, if we here in Seattle don't find some kind of shelter, that people are going to continue getting sick, and it, you know, that's a public health issue. So that's another thing.
Yeah.
I try to stress.
And wait till somebody gets a flu and it just sweeps through. The at some point through the winter in the northern half of the United States, the Occupy movement is going to be confronted with, you know, a question of what do we do? And I can tell you the power structure right now is shifting their strategy to, okay, we'll just wait them out, you know. And, it's going to be really interesting to watch. I'm not going to pretend to be wise enough to offer advice to the Occupy movement. I agree with Jefferson that if you poll the largest number of people, you will get the wisest answer. And I'm just one guy. But I do know that the power structure, that the on all sides, frankly, you know, the machine, Republican, Democrat, Independent, mostly corporate, is just figuring, okay, we tried fighting them, we tried ridiculing them, we tried ignoring them. Now and I think now they're going to try to go back to ignoring them.
Well, I have a suggestion. I mean, actually, I don't know if this is a suggestion, but it's a pattern, a model that's been used before in Seattle. There were two buildings here that were occupied in the late 60s and early 70s that are still being used by their communities because people just refuse to give them up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is a place called El Centro de la Raza. There's another place called the Central Area Motivation Program, which was an old fire station. And I'm just saying, you know, if there's an unoccupied building out there, that's an option because people do need to get out of the cold, that's for sure. But I don't think that the winter is going to stop this movement.
Yeah.
I do agree that if it were spring right now, that the numbers would be growing immensely.
Yeah,
but
will again next spring. Trust me, they will again next spring. And you know, every city has a lot of empty buildings. That's a very interesting thing to think about. But Mark, I got to move along. But thank you for the report from Seattle.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. Good to
shout
hear from you.
Shout out from Occupy Seattle.
Okay, a shout out back to you at Occupy Seattle. Keep up the good work, y'all. And every Occupy movement in the country. I'm changing my tag, you're it, at the end of the show here to tag, you're it, go out and occupy something, because that's what we've got to do. Don in Cottonwood, Arizona. Hey, Don, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling regarding the use of Article 5 of the convention to call a constitutional convention.
Article 5 of the Constitution that says it says two things. One, that the Constitution may be amended by specific amendments being proposed in the House and Senate and then ratified by 3/4 of the states, and also that a constitutional convention may be called by an equal hit, as it were, and the entire Constitution can be reevaluated. That's what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. What my point is, I'm wondering if the 99% movement can move in that direction. The reason why I'm saying this is that if the convention can be called through the 99% movement,
right,
that convention then could create a whole range of radical proposals that Congress itself may not ever be able to put into effect, such as getting rid of lobbies or reducing monopolies, or there's a whole range of things. We wouldn't have to decide what the things are, but just if you can get the convention together, these radical things that everybody wants to see happen.
What if those things were things like you can only vote if you have ID, and voting is only done between 8 and 5 on Tuesdays to drive up the wealthy Republican vote and drive down the poor vote? What if those things are that oil companies can no longer be regulated? What if that the stuff in the Constitution says that, you know, people earning over $1 million a year pay no taxes? Here's my concern. If a progressive state like Oregon, where I lived for 5 years, can have put on the ballot, on the referendum, on the ballot by a right-wing crank group from New York State, can have put on the ballot for everybody to vote on to amend the Constitution of the state of Oregon to say that the Congress of the state, the House and Senate of the legislature of the state, may not increase taxes unless it has a 2/3 majority, which basically, you know, they can increase expenses, they can pay for things, but they can't increase taxes. Or another one, the kicker law, that if there's any money left over at the end of the year, it cannot be kept for future years in case that there is a downturn. It has to be given back to all the people in the state. Both of these are things that benefit the wealthy tremendously. Both of them were widely ridiculed when they were first brought out. Come on, this is crazy. This is just for rich people. And both of them actually passed and amended the Constitution of the state of Oregon because millions of dollars came in from out of state and convinced average working people that these things were somehow wonderful. And I'm concerned. This is why I debated Lawrence Lessig on this in New York about a year ago at a coffee party event. And he wanted to have a constitutional convention. And I'm saying, I don't want to open up the Constitution while the right wing has so much power in the United States.
But as an alternative, I would think that the fact that the counterbalancing point is that three quarters of the states would have to approve it. So anything that is that regressive that you're concerned about would by its nature fail if the 99% movement.
Maybe. I would not ever underestimate the power of $1 billion spent on television advertising. That's why I'd say individual constitutional amendments, yes. But open the entire Constitution up to be rewritten from the ground up, I'm very, very worried about that, Don. Thank you for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next is Citizens Intervention. Citizens Intervention? Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And this weekend here in Washington, D.C., there's a lot going on. I mean, there's two different Occupy movements happening in D.C., one probably a little more focused on the war, one more focused on economic policies. And this weekend at the Capitol building, there's going to be a Enough is Enough Citizens Intervention Rally that I believe has been co-sponsored by the Coffee Party USA. Eric Beiler, who is a partner with Annabelle Park, who put together the Coffee Party way back, you know, a couple of years ago as a response to the Tea Parties, on the line with us. Eric, citizensintervention.com, by the way, the website. Is this a, you know, tell us the genesis of this.
Well, during the, first of all, thanks for speaking at the rally, I should say, Tom.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there tomorrow at noon, by the way.
Yeah,
I should say.
He's speaking at noon, everyone. And, you know, I was just listening to the Stephanie Miller show, and there was an interview from Occupy DC at McPherson Square. It was a young man named Israel, and he was so excited that he was going to be able to see you in person tomorrow. He was talking about the rally as a huge, like, event for Occupy DC. So thanks so much.
Oh, that's great. But this rally is separate from the Occupy movement, is it not? I mean, this is not an attempt to co-op or, you know, all that kind of stuff. This is just, hey, you know, a bunch of us are going to come out here and say our piece. That's
right. I don't think the Coffee Party is capable of co-opting anything. We are a volunteer organization. We take donations from our members of averaging $30. We have about 500,000 people in our network, and we are funding this rally ourselves. The genesis was when we were watching this horrible debt ceiling hostage crisis on TV and feeling so helpless. Annabelle created a sign-up form and said, we're getting the permit for the front lawn of the U.S. Capitol on October 29th. Who has something to say about the issue of money and politics? And we just got an overwhelming response.
Now, was this back before the Occupy movement started on the September 17th?
It was. It was. So it's been an interesting choice for me because I have a lot of duties with Coffee Party preparing for this rally tomorrow, but on October 1st, Occupy DC began, and as a filmmaker and a documentarian, I just felt like history was unfolding and I had to be there, and so I actually filmed the very first day, the very first night, the first six people to spend the night at McPherson Square, and my YouTube videos have helped them to raise money and also to get more people to support them, and now they're a little city.
I mean,
they have hundreds of tents. They have Wi-Fi, solar panels. They have two generators and a full kitchen. It's a community, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
They're going to be supporting us just the way that Coffee Party has supported them. I think we were early in the migration from maybe fear or apprehension about this movement to seeing it as really the hope for our country.
Yeah, it's good to see people working together. You know, rather than competing, because so often in movements, the old joke or cliche is the smaller the pond, the more the frogs fight. You know, and this is this movement started out as a fairly small pond. It's grown now substantially, and I think a lot of people are coming into it, but there are still people who are using phrases like, you know, co-op and compete and whatnot, and this is not about that at all.
Yeah, you know, I've had an interesting, you know, relationship with them over the last month. I think that Shane Brooks, who, by the way, thanks for having him on your TV show yesterday.
Yeah.
Shane Brooks, the former Tea Party organizer, has really engaged them in the right kind of way, not in that co-opt kind of way or anything, but in the dialogue that they seek. And I think, like the Coffee Party, which is transpartisan, we are nonpartisan, these young people are really not about choosing sides and throwing bricks. They really are about solutions. And they understand, I mean, they've occupied K Street. They understand that the cycle of corruption flows from Wall Street to K Street and to the U.S. Capitol. And so we're completely on the same page in terms of the issues that we advocate and the reforms that we advocate for. By the way, at citizensintervention.com in the About section, you can see our new position paper, which we're going to unveil tomorrow and get input on during the rally.
Right. Okay. And the rally is just, this is just a one-day off thing. It starts at noon tomorrow. I'll be speaking at noon, and then it runs until 6 o'clock the next morning. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's how long we have the permit.
I see.
And we have people signed up all the way through 11 p.m., but with the snow that's expected, I do encourage you to come down and do a walk-up sign-up, or you could go to citizensintervention.com and sign up to speak on the standby, because I think there'll be some no-shows from people who don't quite have the patriotic heart to go out there and brave the snow and the cold.
Or maybe they just got the flu.
Yeah.
It's going around. It happened to one of my producers last week.
Jacob Dean, actually, one of your producers, is going to help me with a YouTube booth. So photo booths in the mall, except for you don't have to pay. People can come and do their statements directly to camera with the Capitol Dome behind them. And we're going to have a whole running thing of YouTube videos with people speaking truth to power, talking about how corruption in Washington is affecting their lives.
That is spectacular. We are talking with Eric Beiler. He is the co-founder, along with Annabelle Park, of Coffee Party USA, and helped come up with this idea of, in fact, before the Occupy Wall Street movement began, of citizensintervention.com, of let's, you know, get a permit for 24 hours on the lawn of the Capitol building, U.S. Capitol building, and get some people out there to make our voices heard, I guess. Who are some of the other people? I'll be speaking at noon. Who are some of the other folks? We have just a minute left here, Eric.
Okay, former Congressman Joe Sestak is speaking. Buddy Romer, the GOP presidential candidate who only takes $100 donations. We have Obi Say, the hip-hop artist. Gowrie K, spoken word poet. Francis Moore LePay is speaking. Lawrence Lessig is speaking. There's a lot of great
Jacob Dean at 8 o'clock.
And Jacob Dean. The important thing
And anybody can sign up to speak? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's why we're staying until 6 o'clock to make sure. We're staying until the sun comes up to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to speak.
That's spectacular. That is spectacular. Eric Beiler, the website is citizensintervention.com. Eric, good luck.
Thank you, Tom. I'll see you tomorrow.
Indeed. I'll see you tomorrow. And thanks for being with us. It should be fun. It should be interesting. And, you know, it's just another step. It's step by step by step, we're going to build a new America, a better America, an America for all of us, not just the 1%.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And now back to Anything Goes Friday. Your calls right after this. Four minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and George in San Jose, California. Hey, George. Thanks for listening to Green 960. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Love the show and love your mind.
Thank you.
I have something, the absurdity of the obscure.
Okay.
With Citizens United and corporations are now people, and if you take the concept of fascism or merging corporate and government, what would prevent a corporation from running for president?
Well, typically, you know, the serious answer is that typically what they do is they find a front man, you know, General Electric had Ronald Reagan, for example. They find a front man who runs for president and then you know, fund him. But in the last election cycle, you know, a year and a half ago, the progressive PR firm Murray Hill, Inc., which is in Maryland in the D.C. area here, they actually ran for Congress. And this is their press release. They said, until now, corporate interests had to rely on campaign contributions and influence peddling to achieve their goals in Washington. But thanks to an enlightened Supreme Court, we can now eliminate the middleman and run for office ourselves. The strength of America, Murray Hill, Inc. says, is in the boardroom, country clubs, and Learjets of America's great corporations. We're saying to Walmart, AIG, and Pfizer, if not you, who? If not now, when? Campaign manager Mark Klein promises to be an aggressive, historic campaign that puts people second or even third. The business of America is business, as we all know, they say, Klein says. But now it's the business of democracy, too. Klein also plans to use automated robocalls, astroturf lobbying, and computer-generated avatars to get out the vote. They plan on spending top dollar to protect their investment. It's our democracy, Murray Hill, Inc. says. We bought it. We paid for it. We're going to keep it. And, of course, it was tongue-in-cheek, but I think it illustrates brilliantly what you're talking about, George. There was also a group that did this, must have been about 5 years ago, in Portland, Oregon. And, in fact, I debated on a stage their human candidate, their human representative, and it was a corporation running for president or for some office.
Yeah, it just scares the hell out of me, Tom. I just got to tell you, because I could see that being fought in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court saying, oh, no, you know, BP is a person. BP can run for president.
Yeah. It hasn't gone that far. Well, you know, the Supreme Court decision didn't actually literally say corporations are persons. What they said, the way that they constructed Citizens United, was that you and I as citizens have the right to be informed on important issues. And corporations, being the most important and well-informed actors in the economic arena, if they were denied the right to speak to us or to our legislators on an unlimited basis, we would then be denied the right to hear free speech, to hear what's important. And therefore, it was a violation of our, you know, the free speech isn't just speaking, it's also hearing. And that, so this tortured logic was that actually it was a denial of our right of free speech to deny corporations the ability to put unlimited amounts of money into politics. I encourage you, but the effect of this has been to say that corporations are people. You know, Scalia made a joke about that in the AT&T case in which the court ruled that corporations aren't people, because AT&T said, okay, if you're going to protect First Amendment rights, how about Fourth Amendment rights? We'd like our privacy rights protected, because we are going to be embarrassed if this Freedom of Information Act filing goes through. And Justice Scalia said, you know, corporation being embarrassed, that's a joke. So, you know, they're kind of pushing back on it, but the effect is the same. You're absolutely right, and it's a horrible thing. George, thank you for the call. Dave in Suffield, Connecticut. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I'd like to say that what's good for the goose is good for the gander as far as corporations or people.
Yep.
I know for a fact that Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, and many other different banks have been convicted of laundering money and even paying for jets to fly drugs into our country. If they can do that, then they should be barred from even having anything to do with lobbying the government or giving any kind of money to any kind of campaigns.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Yep. Harvey Wasserman has been one of the great writers on this. There's several. There used to be a newsletter called The Corporate Crime Reporter that he and, I'm forgetting his partner, wrote. And I quote, there's a whole chapter about it in Unequal Protection, which is now, in fact,
yeah,
that chapter is up on
PBS Frontline.
Yeah.
They had a show about banksters that were laughing at the fines that they got for what they were doing.
Oh, I know. It's a cost of business. Not only is it a cost of business,
yeah,
it's very often a deductible. It's a deductible cost of business. Absolutely right. But you can read that chapter of Unequal Protection for free over at truthout.org. They're putting the entire book up for free. And you know, I think you may find some value there. Mark in San Jose. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I saw your video on the 147 companies.
Oh, yeah, the rant we did day before yesterday.
Yeah, I wondered what the top ones were.
I don't have the list in front of me. Three of them were banks that you'd recognize. A couple of them, the reason I didn't, we were thinking of scrolling the list, you know, as part of the rant. But there was a surprising number of companies, surprising to me anyway, of companies on there whose names I did not recognize at all, who either fly very much below the radar or they're European companies. And the gist of this article, this was a scientific analysis where they used a statistical analysis of who's really connected to whom. In other words, the interlocking boards of directors and you know, who influences whom, who owns whom. And they looked at 37 million companies around the world, and they came up with, as I recall, 14,600 or something like that, or maybe it was 11,200. It was in that neighborhood that were the most highly connected companies. And out of those, there were 147 companies that were virtually connected to everything and everybody, and they basically controlled 40% of all the commerce on the planet. And that, as I pointed out in the analysis, that's the cancer stage of capitalism. That's, you know, that's like, you know, the liver cells have decided that they're going to take over the kidneys and the stomach.
Yeah, I saw your diagram with the blocks there on that short video.
Yeah. And that's cancer. That is political and economic cancer. Mark, thank you for the call. And you can Google that, by the way. 147 companies control the world. It should probably come up fairly easily because it did get a lot of press. This is a story from just last week. Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Michael, you are on the air. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I love what you just said. Free speech isn't just speaking, but also hearing, you know?
Yeah.
And those people you just talked about, those who are connected, really connected to everybody and everything, they understand that. And they've been listening to everything we've been talking and doing thus far. So we must be aware of what's being said, especially from them. Now, I have a thought, and I'd like to get your opinion on this thought also. With the Wall Street occupation movement taking place as we presently speak, the global elite, or those who are really connected to everybody and to everyone, they've already planned the outcome because they've been listening to us in the first place and may have been instrumental in starting this process in the first place because they realize where every action, there's a reaction and thus a solution, which they've already got outlined. They've done so in war. Take, for example, the Vietnam War. In other words, the outcome they've already have planned for their benefit. Now, what do you think about that, Tom? As well, I encourage your listeners to take a listen to look up the Act of 1871, the Congressional Act of 1871. Yes, Tom.
Okay, great. I'm not so much of a fan of the conspiracy theory of history. There certainly have been conspiracies, and there certainly are conspiracies, but typically, it's, in my experience, it's one of two things. Either A, it's right out there in the open. I mean, it's like the conference board or the Chamber of Commerce. They're right out there doing it and making no bones about it. The Heritage Foundation, the Cato Foundation, the Koch brothers. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, they have their secret meetings and all that kind of stuff, but you can pretty quickly figure out what they're up to. And B, it seems to me that there's an awful lot of kind of stuff happens. You know, the times come. I've never subscribed to the notion that the leader makes the times. I don't think Franklin Roosevelt did the New Deal because he was Franklin Roosevelt. I think he did the New Deal because he became president in the Great Depression. I think the times make the man, not the man that makes the times, or the woman, as the case may be. Certainly the case of Margaret Thatcher. Just bottom line, That's my thoughts on that. Alice in Saginaw, Michigan. Hey, Alice, we have a minute to the break.
Thank you. And thank you for the work you do. And I just wanted to tell you about our Occupy Saginaw support groups that we've had going last week. The Saginaw Valley State University students organized a group in front of the Bank of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to call it BOA, like boa constrictor, you know, BOA.
Right.
Anyway. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, we had demonstrations in front of Dave Camp's office. He's our rep here.
Mm-hmm.
And made arrangements to go up again this afternoon to meet with somebody up there to present some causes for homeless people and people who are under losing their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Friday, they had a general assembly in front of the courthouse
mm-hmm.
to support
support Occupy.
Right.
And they marched down to Chase Bank and had an event in front of the Chase Bank for an hour, and that General Assembly went from 12 to 12.
Spectacular.
And then tonight they're having another General Assembly, and they plan to have one every Friday in front of the courthouse.
That's great.
No further notice.
Occupy Saginaw. Alice, thanks so much for the report. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls as we go through Anything Goes Friday. Plus, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on here in D.C. and around the world. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program, and Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ah, it looks to me like you are in the luxury suite of the White House there, leased by the Talk Radio News Service, down the basement underneath Jay Carney's off the little hoop-de-doop up there. Do I have that right?
Actually, I'm in another basement.
Oh, okay.
Can you believe it?
It's just the colors are similar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's another basement.
Okay,
you know, I'm going to leap to a different story than my lead, because you mentioned Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So it's given me a lead.
Okay.
Yes, the 16 Commonwealth countries for which Queen Elizabeth II is monarch, which represents, by the way, 30% of the world's population, so she really is queen of quite a lot, agreed today that males will no longer have precedence over females in the order of succession to the throne.
Right, which is a pretty big deal, actually. They also
they also
agreed that if one of the royal family wants to marry a Catholic, that that's no longer forbidden.
That's right. Monarchs can marry Roman Catholics. Monarchs can actually marry somebody of any faith except a Catholic.
So it's not that it had to be Protestant and Catholics and everybody else were excluded. It was that specifically. And is that because of Cromwell?
Well, it's because of all the Catholics.
Yeah, well, Henry VIII, actually, it would be the start of it, I suppose.
Yeah, he was the start of it because he wanted to get divorced.
Right, the Catholic Church said no, and so he started the Church of England and off
there
to the races.
There you go.
Off
yes.
to the races, yeah.
So it's really very interesting. Obviously, we've got Charles, who nobody wants, and then we've got Wills, who everybody wants.
I like Charles.
I know. He's good on the environment and stuff.
He is. I think he would make a marvelous king. You know, particularly given that the king doesn't have any power.
Exactly.
He's just basically a bully pulpit, and Charles has got some good things to say.
And the Queen opened the meeting today by the way, citing financial concerns, food supply insecurity, and climate change among key issues that she expected these leaders to address.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, those are the things that she thought were important.
These are things, you know, that the Catholic Church is talking about now, too, the Pope.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting how leaders in other countries are talking about issues which we're not.
Right, whereas here we're debating whether or not Barack Obama actually was born in this country or what his grades were.
Yes.
Yeah, which is, again, code for for race and affirmative action and all that kind of stuff.
Did he get a fake foreign scholarship?
Yeah.
Meantime, back on the super committee, which has 25 days to go, liberals on and off Capitol Hill are getting really, really ticked off with the super committee Democrats. They think that they're bungling negotiations over the budget deal.
Yeah, I went off on a long rant about this last night. They put $1 trillion worth of cuts to, or $400 billion worth of cuts to Medicare on the table as their opening negotiating position. I'm sorry, your opening negotiating position should be, screw you, buddy, we're going to do it our way. And then you negotiate from there, rather than, oh, here's everything you want, now let's talk.
It's so interesting. They talk about Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I mean, this is so interesting. They apparently didn't learn from the summer, because Republicans are saying, screw you.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll continue to. And it's just, well, we will see as the Democrats continue to shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, they're well intentioned, you know. That's the incredible
thing.
The road
to hell is paved.
Ah, you're I'm so in love with Will Rogers' old quote. You know, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Anyway, back to you, Victoria.
Well, meantime, it's considered that the odds are no better than 1 in 3 mm-hmm. for the super committee reaching a bipartisan consensus in the next 25 days mm-hmm. to meet the $1.2 trillion threshold.
Right.
So that's not good. But they're trying. And what is also considered interesting is that Speaker Boehner and Minority Leader Pelosi didn't say a couple of things when they had dueling news conferences yesterday. Boehner didn't say that the number for tax increases should be zero. He didn't say that.
That's interesting.
Yes, he did reject $1.3 trillion. But he didn't say it should be zero. So he's sort of where he was in his talks with Obama before he walked out.
Yeah, but as soon as he says, okay, it can be $1, Eric Cantor's going to poke that knife in his back, and all of a sudden everything's going to change.
Well, that's the thing. That's what we don't know. Meantime, Mitt Romney, you will be surprised to hear this, has flipped his position on climate change.
Well, I remember a month or so ago he said climate change is real and humans play a role in it. We're not sure how big that role is, but that's pretty undeniable.
That's right.
And how has he changed from that?
My view is that we don't know what's causing climate change on this planet, and the idea of spending trillions and trillions of dollars is not the right course for us. He went on and doubled down. I think the EPA, acting in concert with the president, really doesn't like oil, gas, coal, and nuclear. I really do believe that the EPA wants to get its hands on all of energy and be able to crush it to cause prices to go through the roof.
So Mitt Romney has basically adopted the Koch brothers' talking point.
Basically, he seems to have done. He was speaking at the Consol Energy Center in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yes. Snakes in a basket of snakes or something.
Yeah, this a week after a major study came out saying basically after compiling more than a billion temperature records dating back to the 1800s from 15 sources around the world, finding that the average global land temperature has risen by about 1 degree Celsius since the mid-1950s.
Wow. A billion points of data?
Yeah, this is the Berkeley Earth Project.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Very, very interesting.
But Mitt Romney doesn't apparently believe in science. He believes in money from billionaires.
Yes.
Okay.
So
I guess we'll have to wrap it at that. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
And let me remind you and everybody else, the Talk Radio News Service reports are brought to you by Ellen Ratner's personal charity to help out Southern Sudan, where she spends a lot of time. She just brought back a freed slave child from there for an eye operation. Anyhow, it's goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And there's a legal showdown over medical marijuana. Americans for Safe Access. The feds have said to California, to medical marijuana growers who are operating legally under the laws of California, growers, distributors, dispensaries, whatever, y'all are about to go to jail if you don't stop. And so this group is saying, this is, by the way, the Americans for Safe Access, the largest marijuana advocacy group in the nation. They are saying for the federal government to do this in violation of California law is a violation of the 10th Amendment. And they have filed a lawsuit, and this may well end up before the Supreme Court. Wouldn't that be entertaining? The U.S. economy sort of bounced back. Our GDP growth is now 2.5%, at least during the last quarter. It certainly won't be that high for the year. But right now, the typical average worker is making $1.36 an hour more than they were when Ronald Reagan was elected. The fundamentals have not changed. Our free trade insanity is still in place. The corporate control of government is still in place. Our ancient and, you know, basically Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. So all these corporations became giant oligopolies in virtually every industry. And our infrastructure across the nation, Reagan stopped basically the building of anything. Unless they, you know, they've built things since then so that they can put his name on them. But that seems to be about it. So where's this recovery coming from? Well, they did the numbers, and it turns out the recovery is coming from people spending their savings and going in debt. It is a consumer spending-driven recovery. What's happened is that we're, you know, 3.5 years, arguably 5 or 6 years. You'll recall back in 2006 when housing starts dropped 34%. On this program, I said, okay, the last time housing starts dropped over 30% was in 1926, and it led to, directly 2 years later, the stock market crash, or 3 years later. And so I am putting you on warning. I'm taking any money I've got in the stock market out. I'm not an investment advisor, but this is bad news. This is the beginning of a crash. And sure enough, 2 years later, it happened. And those of you who are longtime listeners know I've been singing this song for a long, long time. So this recovery basically is just rooted in wiping out the middle class. All that said, it's Anything Goes Friday. Let's pick up some of your thoughts. Sanchez in East L.A. with an update on Occupy L.A. and San Diego. Hey, Sanchez, what's up?
Senor, despite the fact I have a terrible head cold this morning, I wish you the best of good days. Senor.
Well, thank you, and the same to you, and you sound just great. So what's up?
Well, okay, thank you. I've been up. I watched the live stream from the Occupy San Diego, which the sheriff, the city police, raided last night. At approximately, we'll call it 2 a.m., they made an announcement and then proceeded forward to push the Occupy San Diego demonstrators out of the area there. Approximately 50 people were arrested, including their media team and journalist Callie Katz, who was trying to get in. They were not allowing any members of the media in to document what was happening. So all we got was the live stream going there. But again, no one was injured. Approximately 50 people were arrested. So that's the latest from San Diego. I would like to offer something because I am a member of Occupy Los Angeles, and we have a unique perspective. We still have, despite the fact that there's all these wild stories flying back and forth in the corporate media, I would like to clarify a couple of things here, because we still have communication to the mayor's office, to the city council, and everyone involved in the LAPD. I'm going out on a limb here by backing up something that was that came out a few days ago. It was a statement by Sergeant Baker, who speaks for the LAPD on behalf of Occupy Los Angeles, and Sergeant Baker was saying a few days ago in a memo to the Jim Lafferty of the National Lawyers Guild. He was saying, Jim, please tell them, this is a quote from Sergeant Baker, please tell them we have no plans to attack the occupation and will not do that. Mm-hmm. This is in response to what was happening in, of course, Oakland, and New York and everything else. So here in Los Angeles, we have this unique situation going on. I would also like to express a huge thank you to Councilman Richard Alarcón for his unwavering support. We understand that there's pressures going on here, but Senor Hartman, I just want to, if I can comment on something that you said the previous hour here. You were saying that the authorities are waiting out all of our brothers and sisters in the Occupy movement. Senor, I've been on the planet here 54 years. You said something about the time makes the man.
Mm-hmm.
When I look into the eyes of these young people, what I see is determination.
Yep.
The time makes the man. We may have to turn back the clock. We may have to go without heaters in the encampment. But I see determination, and these people are going to go through the spring. Yes, we might lose a few people, but there is determination in these people's eyes.
I agree. That's why I said even in the northern areas where they may, you know, move indoors through the winter or may not. I mean, who knows? in the spring. It's going to be back, and it's going to be back big, and it's going to be a factor in the presidential election, and it's going to be a factor in the future of this country. This is a turning point. This is the bonus army.
Exactly, senor. And one last thing, if I may, because I know you're a huge fan of green, I would like to send a shout out to Power of Green Los Angeles, who are powering the live stream and all of the electronic equipment for us there at Occupy Los Angeles. They're doing some wonderful work for us. That's it for me here from Los Angeles. Back to you in
Great.
The studio.
Okay. Thank you. Perfectly done segue. Thank you very much, Sanchez. Brilliant. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, Sam, you've got a your surgery hasn't happened yet, right?
It'll be Tuesday.
It'll be Tuesday next week.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I will remember you in my prayers. I wish you the very best. So, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to give you a report about the Upper Big Branch mine disaster.
Mm-hmm.
The United Mine Workers president, he said it was industrial homicide, and that their inspector, he got guilty.
Wow.
He said he was guilty. And then I got this here little Ballard, On with the Movement, Ballard of Occupation.
Mm-hmm.
It goes like this: you silly people of greed, you will never proceed to succeed. It's not about money. In your blindness, you'll see it's today's fathers and forefathers' rights that we need, and that's justice that will proceed. Insane insurance, banksters, and such that are hurting hurt people much, much. Now, we will unlock the lies, and Americans will be free to excessive fees with democracy's keys, and you tyrants will be on your knees.
Okay. Sam, thank you very much for sharing with us. And give us a call later.
That was on Victoria's birthday I wrote that.
Okay, that's great. Well, you wrote that. Oh, that's brilliant. Sam, you're a poet. Give us a call next week or the week after to let us know how you're feeling, okay?
All right, thanks for y'all's prayers.
You're welcome, and good luck with your cancer surgery. I wish you the very, very best. That's a tough one. That's a real tough one. Mike in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to WDTW. What's up?
Hey, Tom, you're great, and I hope we all get better.
I'm
a mailman. Yeah, I'm a mailman, and I've been inspired by you to join the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. I was at the committee last night, and the mayor of Ferndale invited us all to occupy Ferndale at 9 Mile and Woodward.
Wow.
From 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock. Yes, the mayor himself invited us. So
that's spectacular.
This is
what happens when progressives infiltrate a political party, is it becomes progressive. That's great.
Yes.
Mike, good on you. That is spectacular. And thanks for the update on Occupy Ferndale. And Ferndale is a great suburb, a Detroit suburb. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday, 866-987-THOM. You can drop into into our live chat room and hang out with the finest minds on earth, 24/7, TomHartman.com.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good.
Well, I'm involved with the Occupy movement in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've been hearing about it, but we've been trying to establish a base camp like other Occupy movements in other cities have, which has many advantages. You know,
mm-hmm.
It allows the movement to grow. You'll attract more people because, you know, it's more comfortable. You know, you don't just have the very hardcore then, you know.
Yep.
And it allows for, in other cities, for example, Pittsburgh, New York, they have a base camp which has, you know, for example, a kitchen, teaching, a place for teaching.
Right, medic area, communications area. Yes, absolutely. So in Chicago, how's it shaken out?
Well, we tried to occupy parts of Grant Park,
mm-hmm.
one part of Grant Park. We tried several times. First time we had 175 arrests and didn't succeed. The second time we had 130 arrests, didn't succeed. Last night we tried to occupy a piece of state property. And that resulted in no arrest, but the police were already waiting for us there.
Hmm.
And it seems to be a disadvantage to our transparency and openness.
Yeah, in other words, you've been infiltrated by police informants who are letting them know where you're going to be, and they get there before you do.
Well, sometimes we even post this stuff on the website before.
Oh, I see. But, you know, yeah, okay. So yeah. They don't even have to. They just, yeah. Have you had any has the Occupy Chicago movement had any communication with Mayor Emanuel about, you know, hey, give us a place?
We talked, we had negotiators talking with him. Our lawyer from the National Lawyers Guild was talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like just before we tried to occupy Grand Park last week, it seemed like they were going to grant us a 24-hour permit. And we thought that was a ruse. We thought that because we were expecting a lot of support, we were expecting a lot of unions to send a lot of supporters to camp with us the first night and maybe get arrested with us and all that kind of thing, which many did. And we thought that, you know, if they granted us a 24-hour permit, that would mean that it would expire Monday morning when all the supporters have gone home. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they could sweep us out of there pretty easily, you know what I mean?
So you said no?
Well, no, actually, we were talking about it, but we never
got to that point. Okay. So,
yeah, right.
So as of right now, Occupy Chicago is a floating movement.
Well, no, we're in the financial district at LaSalle Street in front of Bank of America, in front of the Board of Trade.
Right.
Across from the Federal Reserve, but the Federal Reserve is not really our issue, only for some of us.
Right.
But only for a few of us, but that's where we are. It's a bit of a hardship to, you know, it's a bit of a hardship. It's cramped. It's
basically occupying the sidewalks.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, okay. I mean, we get a lot of people there on Friday, Saturday night, and the evening after work, you know, after five.
Good.
A lot of people come down overnight. There are only five or six, but we keep a presence nevertheless.
Okay. Well, Mark, thank you very much for the update, and thanks for the information. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you live in Chicago. Bob in Oakland. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Tom, how are you? I'm on the social media committee in Oakland, California. What we're trying to do, if you could, anybody in earshot, is broadcast, because the police raided us the other night and razed the camp to the ground. We're now trying to get more tents back out there.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody in earshot who has a tent that can contribute, or if they can donate a tent, that would be greatly helpful. And we're looking for large ones, because most of the committee or workshop-based tents were the very large tents.
Right. So pup tents, you know, okay, but what you really need are the kind that'll hold 6-8 people, 10 people, whatever, or a larger, for the exactly. Occupy Oakland movement. And you just bring them down?
Just bring them down. Just bring them down. Exactly.
Okay. Great. Bob, thank you very much for the update. Anything else you want to add?
That's about it. You know, it's just, we reclaimed the park. Of course, the mayor was booed out last night, but, you know, it's pretty intense, and people are fired up, and people see that what people have to realize about Oakland is that the Occupied Oakland base camp is a symbol. People got angry. It's a symbol. And if people would come down and actually see the workshops that are taking place, one of the former Black Panthers, David Hilliard, came down and spoke as well. Michael Moore is on the way. MC Hammer was down watching with us. But the point being is that the camp, if you stand out on the edge and look in, you're going to be dismayed, because it may look like something that's not possible. When you get inside and get involved, it's a beautiful thing. The workshops are taking place on the ground. It's like being back in the 19th century. Blacks are talking to whites. We have workshops on race, gender, and equality, on the history of political protest in America. We're feeding people, providing clothing. We haven't heard any of this in the major media yet. Everything was focused on the so-called Occupy Oakland protest or riot. It wasn't an Occupy Oakland protest or riot. It was a police riot. And, Tom, they started it. Nobody threw anything. There were things being pelted after the engagement, after they engaged, but it was not started by the Oakland Occupy protesters. I was there. So all the support we can get, come on down. We're back in that positive mode again, and we do need the tent. That's what we need.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much, Bob. Sam in Orange, Texas. Sam, got just a few seconds here, about a little less than a minute. Something real quick?
Tom, I wanted your opinion on why big business and small business didn't support progressive health care change.
Single-payer health care?
Single-payer system.
You know, there actually were some big businesses that came out in favor of single-payer health care. They were drowned out. Their voices were drowned out by the health insurance industry. But the other problem is that if you go to theyrule.net, you can actually see how this works. Most of these large corporations share board members with other large corporations. It's like this giant interconnected web. And then the CEOs of the 100 largest corporations are all part of a club. Jon Snow used to be the CEO of this club. And so, you know, from the conference board to the you know, these shared boards to the CEOs themselves who hang out, it's really an old boys club. And the health industry in the United States is like 20% of our GDP. It's huge. So they just have a lot of power. Sam, I think that's the reason why.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word, ugly, right after this. And your calls on Anything Goes Friday. Yep, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very paleoanthropically ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good, Fox News viewers. It looks like the talking heads aren't doing their job over at GOP TV, also known as Fox News. According to a GOP TV Fox News poll released yesterday, a majority of Americans, 52%, think President Obama's ideas for the economy are good, but he has just not been able to implement them. Not exactly the sort of praise for the president you'd expect to hear coming from a Fox so-called news poll. Down in the bunker, Roger Ailes will probably start cracking the whip. The bad. Herman Cain. Apparently the man who is pretending to run for president doesn't want people talking to him. He doesn't even want his own staff talking to him. According to a former Cain staffer who quit because of how poorly managed the campaign is, all staffers were directed in an email to never speak to Herman Cain unless they were spoken to by him. That's right. Don't speak unless you're spoken to. No hellos, no how's your day, no hey, you've got something in your teeth, no nothing. I guess ultimately Cain is trying to avoid the gotcha questions from everybody, whether it's who's the president of Croatia or what's for lunch today. And the very, very ugly, the Virginia Citizens Defense League. The pro-gun rights group announced it is holding an event next month to protest against colleges that have bans on people carrying concealed weapons on campus. And in a glaring act of inhumanity, the organization is holding one of those protests at Virginia Tech University, the same school where back in 2007, a man brought concealed guns onto the campus and killed 33 people in the worst school shooting in American history. I know the gun nuts think we should have guns everywhere, from schools to churches to hospitals to daycare centers. But do they really have to demonstrate at Virginia Tech, the site of the worst gun massacre in our nation's history? It's just very, very ugly. Or at least the worst campus gun massacre. Amazing. I mean, I just, you know, how can you say it beyond that? It's just amazing. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, among others, Henry in Houston, Texas. Hey, Henry, what's up?
Oh, I just, hello, thank you for your show. I just want to make comments about prescription drugs and drug manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
You know how they use their patents they get, and they jack the price wherever they want them.
Yep.
And no matter what we have to pay for them, it just, I think some of, you know, that, just gouging us all the time. There's nothing in between us and them.
Well, they certainly are profitable, and their CEOs and senior executives are making millions, and in some cases hundreds of millions, and their stockholders are making billions. So, yeah, there's a lot of evidence out there to support your contention.
Yeah. And just looking at some of the pills I take, like $6 for a pill.
Yeah.
I know they don't cost them that much, you know?
No. No, they don't. And they would say that, well, a lot of that expense is research and development. Actually, most pharmaceutical research and development that is genuinely developing new drugs is paid for by you and me through the National Institutes of Health and done in universities. The R&D that these companies do is they'll take, you know, one version of a particular drug that they've developed, and they'll change the molecule just a little bit to come out with a slightly new version so that they can renew the patent on it and come up with a new and improved version that may actually even have more side effects. Typically, they try to improve them, but every improvement, every change is a brand new drug with a brand new, it starts the patent process all over again. So for however many years, you know, that patent lasts on pharmaceuticals, I think it's 7, but I could be wrong, that they get to jack up that price. Henry, thanks for bringing it up. I appreciate it. Diane in San Diego County, California. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hi, Tom. First time caller. Enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
Wanted to let you know that Occupy San Diego was routed by the police last night.
Yes, we had a report to that effect earlier in the hour.
Yes. Oh, I missed it. Mm. Well, it was 50 sheriffs and 50 police. Mm. So that's 100 people. And they gathered this morning at 8:30 to protest the arrest of over 40 persons.
Right.
So we live in the tip of California, and we're often forgotten because you have L.A. and San Francisco.
Right.
But San Diego is a petri dish for the worst things that the Republicans can think about. We have been experimented with continually, including environmentally, and this Occupy is a nascent movement that needs support. So
yeah.
I just called to let you know.
Okay. Well, thank you, Diane. Thank you for sharing that. You're absolutely right. And I would say it has gone beyond nascent. If my definition of nascent is right, I think it is a fully emerging, maybe that's what nascent means. Tell me what nascent means. Do you know?
Nascent.
Yeah.
Nascent means beginning, but I'm talking about San Diego because of the conservative nature of our government.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it meant emerging, but the Occupy movement in general has, I think it's gone full, you know, mainstream. But I think you're in San Diego, I take your word for it that it's just starting there, and therefore it needs support. Go for it. Yeah.
These protesters went to the city council and asked the San Diego City Council for recognition in at least an ability to get on the agenda and ask them for the same support that LA got.
Right.
And the San Diego City Council walked out of the room.
Yeah, well, you know, San Diego it tends to be a very wealthy, very Republican, very conservative, and very military town. I mean, you got a military base there. So that doesn't surprise me, but that doesn't mean, I mean, if anything, I think that means that the Occupy San Diego movement is as important as any others and perhaps more so. So
well, I think so, too, and I just would like to say the last thing is that if you watch that link, and I don't have the URL here now, but that was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in the United States, and I'm 64, and I've lived overseas. I have a lot of experience, and I couldn't believe what these young people did. And there were people of all types in that crowd,
right.
Young, old, black, white, Hispanic. It was fantastic.
And
so we have a beginning here, but we had 100, as far as I know, 100 police officers or sheriff's deputies tromping in at 1:30 in the morning, breaking up this camp. What are they thinking of?
Yeah, well, what they're thinking of is that, well, first of all, for many of the cops, they're just doing their job. They're, you know, let's keep in mind, there is civilian rule in the United States. The police officers do what they are told to do by the civilian authorities. So our first complaint should be to the city council and the mayor. And as you said, when you all tried to complain to them, they walked out of the room. But secondly, we also have to admit, and I back, you know, a couple of decades ago when I was trying to write science or, excuse me, detective novels, I hooked up with a friend of mine, DeWitt Wanamaker, who is a private detective, was then, and he got me, this was the year the Olympics came to Atlanta, I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I was one of the first civilians to go through the Georgia Police Academy training, and that qualified me for a private detective license, and which I wanted to get so that I could, you know, write these novels. It was just like I was learning stuff. But the interesting thing, I remember the last day that DeWitt and I were there, we were going through this training, and we were sitting in they have this huge atrium at the Georgia Police Academy. And by huge, I mean like, you know, football field size. And the cadets, the police officers who are going to be state police officers shortly, march in formation there, you know, because it's indoors, and so it doesn't, they can, in their dress blues, you know, and not worry about the weather. and they're marching in formation, and I'm looking at this group of people, and I said, how much do these guys make? And this was like 20 years ago. DeWitt says, I don't know, I think they start around 40, 35, 45,000 a year, whatever it was, you know, back then. And I said, you know, you couldn't pay me that much to have people shoot at me. And he kind of laughed. And this is a guy who's been a police officer his entire life, you know, small town cop, large town cop, private detective now, really understands the culture and the people. And he said, you know, about half those people are really good people who are committed to serving the public. Frankly, I don't remember the percentage that he gave me, but he said some of those people are. He said, but some of those guys, you give them a club and, you know, billy club and the ability to beat people up and not be held accountable for it, they would pay you. And it's a sad commentary on the, you know, that we don't pay our police officers and frankly our teachers as well, as well as we pay, for example, our physicians, and certainly nothing close to the way that we pay our banksters. And it's like another statement of how our priorities are out of whack in this country, and you know what we need to be doing, who we need to be holding accountable, and Diana, pardon my digression there, but I think that you know I'm sure you saw that in Occupy San Diego.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the call. It's a I think that my stories are why you tune in, and sometimes I think maybe I just blather too much. Todd in Amherst, Ohio, we got a minute to the break. Todd, it's all yours.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I got a question on me. You sound like an intelligent gentleman to me.
Occasionally.
And why is the government taking Social Security funds and putting in the general fund?
It's not. The Social Security funds.
Why is the government using Social Security funds for something else?
The Social Security funds are invested in treasuries. Treasuries are money that is lent to the government, and that money then goes into the general fund. But when those treasuries are redeemed, that money has to come out of the general fund. So part of the total debt of the United States is the money that the United States owes the Social Security.
Correct. In other words, they're tapping Social Security.
Well, not really. Not any more than the Chinese are.
Because of all the money that they put into Social Security.
Who's the they?
The people that work.
People put money into Social Security. Social Security can then do three things with that money. They can put it in a bank account. I don't think I want Bank of America having my Social Security money. They can put it in the stock market. I sure as hell don't want that. Or they could buy treasuries with it. That seems like a reasonable investment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Anything Goes Friday, 45 minutes past the hour. Drop by TomHartman.com and check out our live chat room. It's actually live all the time.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Jacob Dean, to our video directors, Chris Bryant and Eric Hamilton, to our phone screener, Julie Lule, and writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alpha Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum at WYD, to everyone at our syndicators, Dial Global, Pacifica Radio, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, all the others around the country, to Monica Koshvi, to Dennis Trunoff, Don Rojas, all the other great folks at Free Speech TV and RT TV who work on the big picture, to Rachel in Santa Fe, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Thank you so much. Fred in San Luis Obispo, California. Hey, Fred, what's up?
Tom, I wanted to inform you I'm altering my voice because there is a very disturbing development that has happened here. The Occupy local movement has been infiltrated by a hate group.
Okay. The Occupy San Luis Obispo?
Correct.
Okay. And the hate group is?
Don't know for sure, but it is probably something on the order of the Aryan Brotherhood.
So a white supremacist group?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, these are the kind of things that are going to happen. And frankly, political movements are very much like our bodies. You know, they have immune systems. People are aware of them. And you, Fred, you're one of the early messengers. You're one of those lymphocytes that goes out and tells the immune system, hey, start cranking up more. Or one of those whatever detector cells that cells says, hey, produce some more T cells. And eventually these people get identified and outed. Like the guy who was in Occupy Wall Street, New York the other day, and who was passing out bongs so he could take pictures of people with bongs and cigarette papers and so that he could try and get them on Fox News. They outed him. So good on you for outing that, and hopefully, you know, it'll resolve itself. Jeff in Denver, Colorado, I have a lot of faith in democracy. If you get enough people together and you give enough of them the voice, that's where it all works. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Jeff? No Jeff. Okay. Anthony in Detroit, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Great. Hey, update in Occupy Detroit,
mm-hmm.
Which you are familiar with, the bridge to come over from Canada, Ambassador Bridge,
mm-hmm.
here in Detroit.
Yep.
Detroit occupiers blocked the bridge, stopped transportation from coming over the bridge, the trucks, the semis that deliver goods and things, because the bridge is, if you don't know, it's owned by a private concern.
I didn't know that. Now, the bridge, isn't the bridge of Port Huron and there's a tunnel in Detroit, or am I remembering wrong?
Well, yeah, there's a blue water bridge that's in Port Huron.
Right.
But in Detroit, there's the tunnel in a bridge.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. It's been a while.
Right.
It's been a while. Okay. Anthony, thanks for the heads up on that. And you know, good luck with that. I wish you the very best. In Colorado Springs, Harold. Hey, Harold, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Just got a quick question for you, buddy. I want to know, why are the corporations who move their American-built companies to, per se, China, a communist country, to help support their communist societies through job creation, not prosecuted for treason? They don't support capitalism. They're supporting the communists.
They are not prosecuted for treason because they own the legislators who would pass the laws that would make that illegal. And, you know, it's like there is no rational reason other than profit that we isolate Cuba because it's a communist country. And if you or I were to even go there, we could go to jail for illegally leaving the United States and going to Cuba. I mean, consider that for a minute. And on the other hand, you know, when Apple takes all their manufacturing over to China, you know, everybody pats him on the head and their CEO is lionized when he dies. And it's like, I don't get it. You know, I don't get it. I'm with you, Harold. I don't get it. And it's not just China, by the way. There's a lot of regimes around the world that are less than desirable. And it's even beyond that. It's like, you know, what's good policy for the United States, including trade policy? Grant and Ventura. Hey, Grant, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just want to let you know that Ventura, Occupy Ventura, is going strong here. And we're having a candlelight vigil for Scott Olson,
mm-hmm.
and in solidarity with Occupy Oakland.
Great.
And we want people to know that.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the report. I appreciate it. Rusty in Newport, Tennessee. Rusty, we have a minute to the end of the show today. It's all yours. What's up?
Now, I was just talking about my job moving overseas.
I'm sorry? Rusty, you need to turn your TV down.
I think it's the fact that one was TV at the same time.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rusty. I appreciate it. Keith in Novi, Michigan. 30 seconds,
hey,
Keith.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, real quick, I just want to encourage people, because the auto insurance industry here has been trying to dump its high-cost claimants on the state, state social services. And I just want to encourage people to contact their state reps and tell them not to do that, because it's already gone through the state Senate. They've passed it.
Well, hey, if it helps out the insurance companies, the Republicans who control the legislature in Michigan are going to be all for it, right?
That's exactly what you nailed it. Yep.
Yep. And what you really need there in my home state, where I was born, is to throw out that, you know, Rick Snyder and all the Republicans. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, we'll have the latest on the Occupy Wall Street movement and why what's happening is truly a teachable moment. I'll challenge conservative Kyle Olson of the Education Action Group Foundation, who disagrees with Wall Street. Plus, we'll find out why the folks at Reason think the Keystone XL pipeline is no big deal, and the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there and occupy something. See you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.